Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
Wendy is with us in studio today, and we are going to be discussing insurance premiums and what is meant to happen if you miss a payment from your side and the insurer's side. And we're going to be looking at the ramifications of missing those payments and what the end result might be. Happy to take your calls and personal experience on this one. We'll also, I hope, have time for a few open line questions towards the end of the hour. If you do want to join the conversation, call us on 021-446-0567 or send a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. Welcome back, Wendy.
Thanks, Pippa. Good to be here.
I wasn't aware before I heard your promo for this week's show that we're actually legally entitled to a bit of leeway if we miss a payment.
Yeah, 15 days is what the so-called policyholder protection rules state. But so that's the minimum. But some insurers do give you a little bit more. So it's a very good idea to read your policy and look specifically for that. Not that you should aim
to take
full advantage of it regularly, but it is good to know if life happens, you know exactly how many days you've got to make a plan.
To make up that payment before it lapses. Okay.
And then, you know, if you have a claim, you know, you're potentially most likely to have it repudiated because your policy is no longer in force.
Are they obliged to alert you if you miss a payment?
Yes, they are. They're also required to do that and tell you how many days you have to make payment.
Okay, so again, not to say that we're encouraging anybody to do this, but no, you're right, that if it does happen...
Yes, because there's a lot at stake, obviously, especially if you're talking about a life policy or, you know, homeowners policies, property itself, the house, if the house burns down, you think your policy's in place, there's a lot at stake if your policy lapses.
Yeah. I know you know this very well because you get some really difficult emails around this topic, don't you?
I do about, just in every, not, no, the emails are always terrible. In some cases, in many cases, life has happened. People have lost their jobs or they've, their income has been reduced in some way and they're just not meeting their commitments. And the hard ones are when people's cars are repossessed. It's far better to speak to the bank and arrange to have them attempt to sell it or to sell it yourself. You're going to get a lot more money because if it's repossessed and auctioned, it's going to fetch a low price. If your car is fairly new, you will still owe the bank. Now you haven't got your car and you're still paying off. But some people, you know, go into denial and they think, well, I will be able to keep paying. I will get another job. Things will change.
Yeah.
And they hang on. And then the bank goes to get a court order and the car is repossessed. And then they come to me and it's just, so difficult. In the few cases, you know, when I do a bit of investigation, you know, there was an agreement to pay a lower amount or something and they're still repossessed and you can make a difference. But in a lot of cases, it's just all you can do is be empathetic and, you know, feel awful for that person and that's it. No real help for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Wendy, look, thankfully today we get it's a case with a different one. You know, look, as Wendy said, we see a lot of those kind of emails cross our desks and often all you can do is say, I'm really sorry this happened to you. But every now and then there is a case where intervening does change the outcome and it feels like such a big win for us as well as for the recipients.
Of course.
Because sometimes the decision to terminate a policy or to repudiate a claim wasn't completely justified or perhaps wasn't properly informed on the part of the person who was making that decision. They didn't have all the relevant information when they took the decision. And this week we have a case study that's very much like that. I have to say, when I first received this email, my heart sank because I saw how long it had been since the issue had arisen. It was over a year and I thought the chances that we're going to be able to do anything here are slim to nil. But happily, I was wrong. Now,
I had the same thought.
You did too. I know you did. I saw from your response that you had the same thought that, oh, but we'll try just in case.
I didn't want to get their hopes up because past experience told me that there wasn't an awful lot of hope, but nobody had anything to lose.
But right.
A bit of time on our part, that's it. So,
and thank heavens you did. So let me just set the scene a little bit before we bring our listener in. Look, to protect their privacy, we're going to refer to this couple as Patrick and Andrew. They've been married for 17 years. They've been together for nearly 40 years. And during that time, Andrew was practicing as a dentist. But when his health took a turn for the worse, he missed a premium payment on their Momentum life and disability policies. And the consequences of that word dire. Wendy, tell us a little bit more before we welcome Patrick.
Okay, so Patrick told us how he had first noticed Andrew becoming forgetful. And this was followed by a deterioration into depression with anxiety. Consultations with a psychologist and a psychiatrist followed. But when Andrew continued to deteriorate, Patrick booked him in for an evaluation to be done on him at Abernoni Hospital. At the same time, Andrew was experiencing financial challenges and had been late in making payments on their policies. So the day of the hospital appointment on the 15th of March last year, it appears that was the last day of their grace period to pay the arrears. But as Andrew had been handling this aspect of their finances, and they both had, he was paying both their Momentum policies. Life and disability policies, right?
So
So
Patrick didn't know that it was the last day of the grace period because it had never been
but
his.
But he does remember Andrew saying, I've made provision for these, the payment of these premiums, and I'm definitely going to pay.
And it's got to be done today.
Yes. I don't know if we can ask Patrick when we get him, and I'm not sure if you made that clear. But as fate would have it, there was a massive one of many. The area where Andrew was practicing dentistry was particularly plagued by power outages, some related to load shedding and others just outages.
So much so. Okay.
Yeah. And so that day, he wasn't able to do, maybe he was planning to make the payment at work, and he had to shut the practice, the patients. There wasn't any plugs working or something to that effect. They had lights, but no plugs. So he didn't make the payment. And then
off we went to hospital and
fate stepped in.
Yeah, things took a turn. Now, we have Patrick with us on the line. So I think let's bring him in at this point to tell us a little bit more about what happened. Patrick, I'm so grateful for you to you for joining us today, because there is such a lot to be learned from your really prolonged, awful experience. But I'm so grateful that you've been willing to speak to us about it, because I think it is going to be an eye-opener for many of our listeners. So thank you for that, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. At the onset, I'd just like to say thank you.
It's our
for
pleasure.
For taking a chance.
Oh, Patrick, Wendy and I are both so relieved that it worked out in the end. You know, it's striking reading your descriptions of what happened. And we're going back over a year, but your recall of this particular day is obviously very, very clear because of all the unusual things that were happening. You had the anxiety about taking him into hospital. There's awareness that this power outage and all the chaos that brought to Andrew's work. And you remember very clearly that he had made provision to make this payment, but as Wendy's described, it just wasn't done because of the combination of circumstances. I mean, it could also have potentially been linked to what was going on with his health at the time, because you did say forgetfulness was one of the things he was battling with, not so.
Absolutely. We've been seeing a psychologist and psychiatrist as well, and I've been noticing it, his forgetfulness, and the psychologist as well. And we realized that for the last 2 years, every time he'd gone for a session, the psychologist was saying that he was saying the same things over. So it was like, let's start from scratch again. And it was decided to do a psych eval and do just proper tests and see, because dementia actually does run in the family.
Right.
So take us back to that day. The March 15 was a significant day because the payment absolutely had to be made on that day. Were you under the impression that he'd paid it? With everything else going on, did you, the two of you, not discuss it until crunch time?
We had discussed it. We'd realized that payment had to be made, and I've actually got a proof where he'd taken money from one account and put it into another account to pay. It was, and we realized that we had to do the medical aid payment as well as the insurance payment before he goes in, because he would have gone in for a 10-day period.
Okay.
And they had they've got a three-phase power in their section in town, and one of the phases was out. So they had lights but no plugs, so they couldn't do any in internet banking. They couldn't work on the patients. They sat there waiting for the problem to be fixed, and that didn't happen. And he then went home. Obviously, also forgetting to do the payment.
Okay. Yeah. And then let's fast forward to the day how long afterwards did you find him on the floor?
He'd come home, and obviously it was with the prior thing was COVID, that he'd had a lot of blood clots on the lungs, and he wasn't getting enough oxygen to his brain sometimes. It could also be part of the dementia. I think he must have fallen at about 3 o'clock, but by the time I got home at 5 o'clock, he was lying on the ground and couldn't get up. I then helped him up, took him to put him in bed, and we had packed for the next day. He was booking into the hospital, and neither one of us actually thought about did he do the payment or not.
Mm. Patrick, you got him to hospital. A CT scan revealed that he had had a massive bleed on the side of his brain. And at that point, obviously, your primary concern, anybody would understand, would have been for his health. But at any point, did you think then about we're going to need to call on the disability policy we've been paying? Did it even cross your mind? At what point did you think to reach out to your broker, for example?
The day that we booked him in, he was booked into a normal ward, and they phoned me and said that he was having difficulty walking and stuff like that, and I had to go in the next day on the Friday to just go sign some more papers so that they have him in an assisted ward. And on the way to the hospital, I got a call from ICU saying that they've got a patient there and I'm the next of kin, and that he had a massive brain bleed, and then only the penny dropped. Hmm. So I had to go sign papers at ICU that they would do a craniotomy at some stage. This all came as a shock because, I mean, I was on my way to sign to the hospital just to sign papers to say that they could put him in an assisted ward, not thinking that he was actually in ICU.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, I was like realizing, okay, this is going to take a bit. At that stage, he couldn't speak. He could maybe say yes or no. His hands were tied down. There was no speech. He couldn't write. I was actually trying to get him to write what he was trying to say. He couldn't write. And I realized this was going to be a bit of a long-term thing. And I thought, okay, the first thing I'm going to need to do is to phone the broker and let him know that what had happened, that there might be a disability claim. I was a medic in the army, so I actually knew the signs, basically.
Yeah. So you call your broker to initiate that process, and that's when the bombshell hit, that you weren't actually covered. Take us back to that conversation and what you learned.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Tuesday after that, after the 15th, the Tuesday the 21st was a public holiday, so everybody was taking the Monday off, and I didn't phone on the Monday because I was also waiting for more feedback from I was going into the hospital every day, and they say no, not today yet, so they might eventually just do a Burr-Hull procedure, and I was just waiting, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to bother this guy. The broker called, I've got his personal cell number. I wasn't going to bother him over a long weekend, and I decided to do it on the Wednesday. When I phoned him on the Wednesday, he just said, well, sorry, his policy had lapsed, and there's nothing he can do about it.
Okay, so just to recap, the policy had lapsed because of that missed payment having not been made within the 15-day leeway. And as Wendy said, that policyholder protection rule says a minimum of 15, but in this case, that was what they'd been allowed.
Yes.
Patrick, I mean, it was an extensive road for you. Andrew remained in hospital for some time, and while his medical bills in part were covered by medical cover, anybody who's been through this kind of experience with a brain injury knows that the road back to recovery or even partial recovery is a long one, and one that requires a lot of intensive rehab to learn to walk and talk again, etc. And not all of that is going to be covered by medical aids. Tell us a little bit about what has happened since then in the intervening months, both in terms of his recovery and what has or hasn't been covered.
Just to get back to the medical aid side, the medical aid also wasn't paid. But the medical aid actually accepted him with that non-payment. I then on the Monday, when I found out that the medical aide said, okay, he's now, we were just on a hospital plan, and they said that the traumatic brain injury policy kicks in on all discovery patients.
Okay.
So I made sure that the payment was done. I paid it out of my own account. And so they would then, they've actually got a very a brilliant traumatic brain injury coverage on for patients like this. They pay up to, it would be up until the end of this year, they would pay for doctor's visits, neurosurgeon, psychiatrist, right, psychologist, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and even for rehab.
Okay, so there's a lot that was covered. Thank heavens for that, that they were allowed, they were willing to continue the cover when you paid up. Wendy, you want to say something
there?
Yeah,
but I know from speaking to Patrick off air, that medical cover is no longer in place because you simply couldn't afford it. Am I right, Patrick?
That's right. I managed to cover a few months of it, and then I unfortunately had to stop paying it. So that's no longer available at the moment.
We've been hearing the story of Patrick and Andrew, a couple who've been together for 4 decades, married for, I think, 17 years, and Patrick explaining to us how Andrew had suffered a traumatic brain injury. And it's more than a year ago now. The difficulty, particular difficulty in this story is that in the process of his health troubles, he neglected to make a payment of a premium on their various insurance policies and missed the deadline, the sort of grace period window to catch up on that payment. And as a result, their disability cover was declined when Patrick spoke to their broker attempting to access it. Now, before the break, Patrick told us he had excellent medical cover for the initial months, but then as his financial situation worsened, had to reduce that kind of cover. And the knock-on impact on their daily lives has been quite substantial. Patrick is back with us. Patrick, thank you for holding. I know it's been a really, really difficult year for you in so many respects. Can you try and summarize for us and explain to our listeners what you've been through? Because it's not only been concerns about Andrew's future and concerns about your financial position, but the impact of your finances being strained is that you've not been able to access key medications, and that in turn has had a knock-on impact on his ability to navigate his situation. Not so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, he's not allowed to practice. He's been the neurosurgeon said he's never going to be allowed to practice again. So him earning an income is never going to happen again. And I can see it as well, just cognitively, things that happen, how he talks, how he reacts to things. Left side brain changes personality as well. He had left side brain and front right bleeding. Changes personality, changes speech. He has difficulty. Sometimes he'll actually think about something and start talking to you, and then gets upset because you not grasping what he's saying. Mm. And this, I think, can only be done on a continuous occupational therapy, speech therapy kind of thing, which I just can't afford at this stage.
Okay. Which is when you reached out to us, and at the point that Patrick mailed us, it had been now over a year since that shock news that the policy that he thought would be in place to cover them was not going to be honoured. Wendy, as we said at the start, you and I looked at that mail and thought, gosh, there's very little likelihood of success here, but we were both thankfully wrong. Tell us what you did and where you went with this.
Well, I must push my hand up and say I almost didn't, but it was just because I just thought, you know,
a year later and
it's
I just didn't feel
there was much hope, but there was a combination of things. Patrick's, we didn't speak, it was all an email, but just the way he was expressing the absolute desperation and end of roadness of how tone that came through in the email. And also even if there was a tiny hope, I had to try, and he couldn't be in a worse situation.
Yeah.
And there have been cases over the years where a no hope case, what I thought was a no hope case, turned out not to be.
Okay.
So thankfully, I told Patrick, look, I did try and prepare him for the worst and say, look, I'm really not hopeful, but let's do this.
Try.
And in my email to the insurer, Momentum Life, I referred to the case as one of those heartbreaking, unfortunate timing cases. Given the circumstances, I said, the dentist's condition affecting his memory and cognitive ability on that fateful March day last year. I said, why did Momentum refuse to reinstate this policy? Because what we haven't said is that, obviously, Patrick's also lapsed, but they reinstated his.
Oh, my gosh, and not Andrew's.
Andrew's, yes. So Momentum came back and said, could we have more time? And I think it was over 2 weeks. But, of course, take all the time. And I took that as positive, actually.
That they were at least looking at it.
Yes, yeah. And re-looking at all the information. And the insurer got back to me last week with the best news. And it went like this. One of the attachments that you shared with us, as well as Patrick's email to you, contained information that we were not aware of before. And this came from Momentum Life's insurance head, Yuretta Butma. This enabled us to review the circumstances surrounding the dentist's policy lapse. The information provided suggests that potentially he was unable to manage his financial affairs prior to the policy lapsing. As a gesture of goodwill, we will I still get goosies just reading this a week later. As a gesture of goodwill, we will reinstate the policy, backdated, and waive the premiums to date.
Gosh.
That's a yeah. He will then be in a position to submit a claim on his disability benefits. The payout in this case is $1.8 million. That's me saying it because I asked Patrick. And obviously they had to include a line that says this doesn't mean necessarily that we were going to approve it, but I mean it's looking good. So Patrick is now sitting in, you know, going in admin hell.
Processing out all of that.
But I mean, a small price to pay. Going through it all.
I mean, Patrick, it doesn't change Andrew's condition and the ongoing really difficult situation you have to navigate at home. But what does this news potentially mean for your ability to help him and to manage his condition and to give him the best possible quality of life that he can have?
You know, I would the day that you called, I will never forget. And going forward, if this is successful, you know, I would just hope to be able to give him a bit of a better life, a bit of a better chance, give him the help or get him the help that he needs. You know, to be able to just relate to other people and get out and be able to function properly. And I think maybe the dementia might get worse in the future, but at this stage he's very hung up about his inability to be able to get across what he wants to say.
Mm. And is there medication, Patrick, that would potentially help with that? Okay,
yes.
So that's what you'll be able to now provide.
Yes. Yes, okay. I can do the right medication instead of just skipping some stuff or just getting generics or,
Brilliant. I mean, I really, really hope that this is the turning point that we all hope it will be. Patrick, there's one element of the story which I think we need to flag as well, and that is the role or the failure of the role of the broker in this case. I think we all hope that when working through a broker who's meant to be your personal conduit, who knows the story and can make the representation on your behalf, you'd like to think that they would do the best possible job of representing your circumstances to the insurer. And the fact that the insurer came back to Wendy saying, gosh, there's much more to the story that we didn't know. Mm. Is a big red flag. Does that concern you that the person who you trusted would be sort of fighting in your corner didn't seem to make a big effort?
Absolutely. You know, we'd been with him for, I'd say, close on 30 years. Hmm. It was like a family business. And I think maybe if I'd, you know, the timeline that I emailed you, I mean, it took me a day to put out the timeline and get all the documents to match all the timeline that I put out as it unfolded. Maybe if I'd done that to him, but I don't know. No, just the day I phoned, they just said, sorry, it's lapsed. There's nothing I can do.
And didn't suggest to you that given the circumstances that you'd made him aware of, that there was a chance
that you could appeal it.
Yeah.
He was just adamant. It's done. It's over.
So I have advised Patrick to lodge a complaint with the FAS Ombud Financial Advisory Intermediary. Anyway, it's for brokers, financial. Purpose looking
I'll
it up.
Look it up
this is the problem when you reduce it to FAS, you forget financial. advisory, intermediary, whatever.
The Ombud for Financial Services is what they call themselves. Okay, the Ombud for Financial Services Providers.
Okay.
So Wendy suggested that you should consider laying a complaint. Do you think you might do that, Patrick?
Yeah, at this stage,
paperwork's exhausting you.
Yeah.
At this stage, paperwork's exhausting, and I need to do my job. My job needs to be out of the house, and I'm still going to have the telephone, the call to the guy, and just really have my say, and maybe even just send him the breakdown of the timeline, and maybe he'll see that things could have been done differently.
And a lot sooner, that the intervention could have happened a lot sooner had he made a bit more effort to represent the case properly.
Definitely.
Patrick, if the main thing is, though, that there is now a light at the end of the tunnel. I know you are up to your ears in paperwork processing the next steps as we speak. But again, thank you so much for being willing to come on the show and speak to us today, because there is so much to learn from this case. And Wendy is going to recap for us some of the key learnings for everyone. But I just wanted to say that we wish you and Andrew all the very, very best. And I know everybody listening to this is rooting for you and hoping that this will signal a turnaround in your futures. Alan in Belleville is writing in to say this is such a touching story. It's fantastic of momentum to come to the party too. And several people just echoing the sentiment of wishing you all the best, Patrick. Thank you.
And we'll be checking in with you down the line.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate what you guys have done. And I'm really thankful for Momentum to giving a second chance.
Thanks, and indeed, Patrick. They deserve that recognition too. Thank you, Patrick, speaking to us there. Wendy, I mean, as I just said, there's so much to learn from this. I've learned something about that 15-day grace period I didn't know existed before
today. And to check your policy to find out. It could be a little bit more, but you know, legally at least 15 days.
But what else are the big learnings?
Okay, so first of all, to communicate with your partners about policy premium payments and make sure they're being paid, especially when you start having, you know, cognitive difficulties and perhaps there isn't a debit order, or perhaps they're moving money around from accounts, and the day that premium debit order was enforced, there was no money, and you don't know because they're not telling you. So there's a very, and you know, for life cover, long-term insurance, as well as on your home, on your car, you know, house contents, all that kind of thing. Just, it's so important, life-changing stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, these can be grudge purchases when we're being squeezed from all sides. Sometimes people just drop their insurances. Just to add, I was talking to you off air. I spent a good few hours yesterday with Debt Busters, the country's largest debt counselling firm, based here in the middle of Cape Town. And I was allowed to listen in on calls, three calls between their financial consultants, stroke debt counsellors, and members of the public phoning in about their personal circumstances. And yeah, the questions, you know, now they totally overindebted. Do you have insurance? Do you have medical? No. People let those things
go.
So they've got no safety net anymore. But just if you have them, just openly discuss it. Whoever's doing the paying, you know, make sure, have that conversation and make sure that you're not missing. And also check your correspondences, your SMSs, your whatever, however these companies are going to tell you that you have this grace period. You don't, that's not an email or an SMS or whatever form of communication that you want to miss.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then when it comes to lodging a claim, both we consumers and financial advisors, brokers, must make sure that all information that could possibly be relevant is submitted to the insurer when decisions need to be made. Even if technically you missed the grace period, policy technically lapses, you know, these financial institutions are required by Treasury, by government, to treat customers fairly. And if there's extenuating circumstances, as in this case, then, you know, there's a popular narrative that they'll find an excuse not to pay. Well, you know, not necessarily.
That sometimes, you know, there are cases where they will recognize those extenuating circumstances.
It doesn't mean that if there's going to be a turnaround in every case. Sometimes what you think is an extenuating circumstances absolutely isn't. But, you know, the bottom line is to give all the information documented. And Patrick did to me, create a timeline, spend time doing that. And also for insurers, the lesson is to ask the right questions around, you know, if the claim is shortly, if for an incident that happened shortly after a missed claim, whatever, and that the medical incident has to do with a brain injury or a cognitive thing, you know, perhaps they should ask, you know, circumstances around, when did it present, you know, who was he responsible for making payments, that kind of thing, as to, you know, not just to be, you know, quick to accept what information they have on the table, but just to sort of perhaps join some dots and ask some further questions, some probing questions.
And you know, find the human story at the heart of the case. Well, Wendy, I'm so relieved that you took it on. Thank you. A 1.8 million rand decision, as it turns out. And we're so grateful again to Momentum for re-looking at this one as well. We'll keep you posted on the further progress on that story.
Cape Talk. Consumer Talk. Call now on 021-446-0567.
So a few follow-up insurance questions, Wendy. A WhatsApp saying, thank you for the present discussion. I pay my house and contents of house insurance annually. Does that 15-day leeway apply to annual premiums as well?
That's a good question, but I shouldn't imagine, we can't see why not.
Yeah. Yeah. But check the wording on your particular policy.
Yes, that's going to be what I was going to say.
The first thing, and it may well be that it's longer in the case of an annual premium.
I honestly don't know. Good question, but yeah, definitely be guided by your own policy
wording. And then somebody asking, what happens in a case where somebody dies and the account is frozen, resulting in a policy not being paid? What would happen then?
Well, accounts aren't normally frozen quite that immediately, but. The estate would also there's a 15-day grace period minimum, sometimes more. So the claim would be, how does this work?
I'm trying to imagine what kind of claim we're talking about here. If it's a life claim.
Of course, it would have been.
The life has ended, so you're going to be claiming on that the event that the policy is designed for having happened.
Claim event, at the time of death, that policy needed to have been.
Up to date.
Up to date, yes.
Yeah. So if there's a payment,
so there's no relevance afterwards.
Death, it's not going to apply
because the person in whose name the policy was and who was responsible for the payment was obviously not able to make the payment at that stage.
The policy of enters.
So it's not going to cover anything after the death of the policyholder.
Okay. And then Richard is asking an interesting question. He says, I've never understood why your insurance remains the same for your vehicle, even though it depreciates in value every year.
Does Wendy
know of any insurance companies out there that factor this in?
Yes, they will. Their argument is that there's more likelihood, there's a bigger risk for the insurance companies of an accident than of the car being stolen. And the prices of the parts are ever escalating. And that's why the prices don't come down. But in my experience, if you certainly if you haven't had a claim in the past year or more, and your car is clearly depreciating as well, then those two factors should certainly mean that you're not going to get an increase. If not, you have a decrease, and that's when it's wise to phone around and get some other quotes. And it could be that you have been overpaying, because they lure you with a very low premium, and then slowly make it more.
That annual 10% increase adds up, yeah.
And it does, and you need to constantly know what the market-related premium should be on that car for its age, et cetera, et cetera. And so then you've got something solid to bargain with.
Okay. A few more people just voicing their pleasure at the outcome of that case. Errol writing in to say, thank you, Pippa and Wendy, for helping Andrew and others. That's why I've been listening to Cape Talk since 1997.
Thank you.
We value you for it, Errol. Thank you. And then I think we can squeeze this in, because there's a lovely message from John and Thelma saying, bless you two ladies.
Oh, yes.
Wendy helped us too. And I know you wanted to mention
this case. I was going to talk about that, John, but we're a little out of time.
We've got about 5 minutes, Wendy. Okay. So let's do a quick summary.
All right. So John actually wrote to yourself and John Matham, and
yes.
As it happens when it's consumer, it gets forwarded to me. It was about John's wife Thelma's Edgar's experience. He said, I'm desperate. My wife had an account at Edgar's for many years. She retired last February. We went and settled the outstanding balance and asked that the account be closed, but now we're being hounded to pay 6,139 rand. There have been no further purchases at Edgar's after the closing of the account last February. But on visiting the Cape Gate store, we were told that the account hadn't been closed and that various insurances had been premiums had been charged. We're back to insurance premiums every month since. R522 a month for insurances, and added up to that just over R6,000.
So you reached out to RCS, which is the firm that manages
Edgar's accounts. I asked them a number of questions around that. The response from Regan Adams, CEO of RCS, who is always very quick to respond, said the customer paid the amounts to settle the balance but didn't ask for a settlement balance, which would have shown that she still had an amount of R534 owing as what they call VAS, value added service, billed on the same day that she made the R2,000 payment. Oh. So she's thinking all is settled. She says she asked for the account to be closed, but there's no record of that, and that's the danger of doing it in that way.
Yeah.
We also never received a closure request, so the account continued to accrue that 500 odd in premiums every month. And they sent statements to her via SMS, but they can see that they were delivered. So maybe, like many of us, she's not looking at SMS; she's only looking at WhatsApps or whatever the case may be.
Or you get an SMS from Edgar's and you ignore it because you think the account's
spam
closed.
Marketing,
and I don't have an account with them anymore.
Yeah. So always check your SMSs. They have conceded that the collection letters that were sent to her email address over the last months were undelivered. It seems we had the wrong address for her on file. Anyway, they've taken off a decision to write off the balance, that 6,000 odd, as a goodwill gesture. I've gone back to them to say, what are the insurances? And they've given me a long list, and this is how it happens. I mean, there's a family funeral fee, a provider plan, personal accident, and personal funeral plan. There's two funerals in there alone. The last one opened in 2021. So I've said, please go to your insurance partner and get the mandates. I want to, because Thelma's saying, I don't know about those.
I've never agreed
to
that.
So we have to see. She may have forgotten, and she may have not at all. So I think it's important to follow up on. And then I asked, how do you close your Edgar's account? And he said, you can submit your, first of all, you ask for a settlement quote. Then you get 5 days to pay it, and you must pay it within those 5 days. So they can't come after that and say, it was more, this has happened. You must pay it within those 5 days. You email it to, if you go online and search, you'll find edgarsclosure@rcsgroup.co.za, or you can go to physical Edgar's store. But he said you can request closure in store, but if the store doesn't log it, the account will remain open. So I would definitely not do it that way.
So this is what Thelma did.
Yes,
in store,
you've got no proof.
There's no proof that you asked for it to be closed. Whereas if you've got an email that can say, hey, on the 4th of May, I gave you a written instruction to close the account.
Exactly.
Nothing is allowed
to accrue.
You
can also call their contact center. The number's easily available via Google. But I would stick to emailing it so that you have proof. And I would add, demand a confirmation letter saying that the account is paid up and closed, because as I know all too well, the debt collectors pop up somehow, sometimes years later. Well, if it's after 3 years, you can just say it's prescribed. If it's within 3 years, I say to people, "Where do you have the letter? Do you have proof?" No, I don't. So sometimes it's hard to get it, but be annoyingly persistent and make sure you get that letter, and then you will have your own email proof that you sent it. But check the address that you're sending it to, the right address. It's complicated, but it needs to be done.
It needs to be done, and it really needs to be done.
But I'm glad Thelma no longer owns
R6,000. And to the other person asking me, edgarsclosure@rcsgroup.co.za is the email to send that request to close the account to. And that is the way to do it, so that you've got an email chain to follow. Mm-hmm. Wendy, it was a real win this week. Thank you very, very much for following up on that story, and thanks for sharing it with us. And we'll chat again next week, Wednesday.
Thanks so much, Pippa.